you'll have the option to, from those male headers, stack your board on top with female headers on your board, or just take some wires and connect over to wherever you want on your board. Okay. Does that make sense? Other questions on what I mean by any of that?
On the DAB, how does the magnetic use that one? How come the magnetic use that one back the other time?
Let me hold off on that for 1 second. Make sure, are there any questions on functionally before more theoretical based questions? We'll do that next. But anything on this?
You said you were going to provide a board. We may need to add, are you talking about switches?
This is purely supplemental to your board. So you'll have this, and you'll have your board with your power stage and your gate drivers, and you can connect the signals over how you like. But for this, I don't know. If one of you ends up wanting to use this, I'll probably give you the one that I populate to test to make sure everything's okay. If all 9 groups want to use this, I'm just not going to be able to get them all populated in time. So I'm just saying I'll give you the PCB and the components and schematics and say populate what you need to use this.
That's okay.
Anything else? Okay. So the question was the dual active bridge, how does the magnetizing inductance impact the design? It would be nice if I still had a DAB schematic on here. So for my DAB, I'll have a primary full bridge. Then my tank, which is just a transformer and series inductor. And then my secondary full bridge. Okay. Now, if my model is like this, and I say, okay, now I have some magnetizing inductance. Magnetizing inductance is a shunt impedance with the transformer. I can sketch that on either side of this transformer, my circuit model, right? I can say it's here with value LM, or here with value LM over N squared. This or this, right? Just reflecting it through the transformer to either side. Now, if my leakage inductance is there, I put it on the primary. Then this magnetizing inductance, regardless of where I sketch it, it's going to always see the voltage of the secondary across it, right? Whatever switch state my secondary full bridge is in is going to dictate V out is applied or negative V out is applied. The only difference is during the dead time, then it will have a resonant type behavior. If you're calling this thing a DAB and you're saying it operates like a DAB, the assumption is going to be that LL is much less than LM, right? And a true ideal DAB, my transformer has what I can approximate as infinite magnetizing inductance because it's so much larger than LL that any kind of dynamics that are happening with LM are orders of magnitude smaller than whatever's going on with LL, and all the behavior is dictated by the leakage. As I start changing my design and end up with an LM, which is still much greater than LL, but maybe not 3-4 orders of magnitude, maybe 1-2, what's going to happen is I'm going to develop a current here, IM, that's going to look like, well, if my VS looks like this, V out minus V out, VS of T. And my magnetizing inductance is going to be ramping up with the slope V out over LM over N squared during this time, ramping down during this time. And then here it's going to have some kind of participation in the resonance. Okay? That's happening only during the secondary dead time. So during the secondary dead time, what I'm going to have for my equivalent circuit is LL, LM, and then VG, whatever polarity it's in. This would be N squared CS. No, CS over N squared. The impedance will go up by N squared, reflecting back to the primary. No, not how I've defined it. And on the secondary high voltage, that's multi turns, then it would drop down. That would cause my impedance to drop. So, really, as far as any signal level dynamics, I've got some DC voltage here. I'm going to have the same kind of AC applied to both of these, right? There'll be a DC offset and the voltage applied to LL. But the AC, the dynamic component of this, is going to be applied equally to both. Okay? This thing is a whole lot bigger than that. So really, there's going to be kind of negligible dynamics in LM during this interval. And for a well-designed DAB, I'm going to be pretty reasonable in approximating this is just a triangle wave. If I want to skip that approximation, then I run into some trouble, right? State plane analysis is not great when I have a multi-resonant circuit. Here, I can't purely combine these elements in a way that helps me with my analysis. So if I do that, then this becomes a circuit that looks like whatever my peak magnetizing current is now a DC source. Now I'm back to where state plane analysis is helpful for me, right? That's a DC solution where this current flows here, this voltage drops there. I can solve this. What it's essentially doing is saying whatever current I had available for ZVS before, now I get some extra current in a direction that's going to help me out for the secondary bridge. As it's drawn here, this would, my current from the magnetizing inductance is really always flowing kind of over here through the full bridge, because when my switches are on, I'm applying a voltage across it, so I've got zero AC impedance from that voltage source. When it's off, I've got this cap here versus an inductor. This is going to be the smaller impedance. My magnetizing current is always going to flow here. Does that make sense? Now I have the ability to selectively steer this magnetizing current. Okay. If I, instead of implementing LL here, if I put, I can give myself the opportunity to worry about turns ratio. If I put the same value reflected by the turns ratio over on the secondary, then this whole analysis flips. Now my magnetizing inductance is going to be pushed towards the primary side. It's going to help me with soft switching on the primary and always circulate over on the primary. Okay. Questions on that? Right. So most of the time, this is going to be fine. This is how it's going to operate. Where it becomes a little bit trickier is if your LL is not a discrete element, if it's the leakage inductance of the transformer, then that's made up of inductances on both the primary and secondary winding, the leakage flux from contributed by both of those, and the magnetizing inductance in the middle. Then kind of approximation still apply, can you still use state plane analysis, but figuring out how that magnetizing current splits between the two bridges requires a little bit more thought. But if LL is a physical inductor that's either on the primary or the secondary, it's giving you your leakage reactance, your series reactance, then it's going to force the magnetizing current one way or the other. Any more questions on that? See if I can find a paper and post to the website on some of these topics for those of you more interested. It's, as you see, as I'm explaining through it, it's a bit of a fine detail in terms of, well, it depends on your implementation and whether you put the leakage on the primary or the secondary or split. That's why it's not covered as your theory in this class, but when you get down to brass tacks and implementation, then it becomes something to look further into. Like we said before, issue with this current is there. It's always there. As long as this bridge is switching at 50% duty cycle at the same switching frequency, this is the current you get. Whether you're at high power and can already get ZVS, or whether you're at low power and need the supplemental current, it's there and it's causing extra conduction losses in your secondary bridge, as I've drawn it. Okay. Any other questions people want to talk about related to competition or related to other things before we jump into today's lecture?
You also analyze the VAE out of the VAE. Is it still controlled by the state?
Yeah. Yeah. You can really, if you don't care about the dynamics contributed by ZVS, I mean, the model of the DAB is that one we sketched before. You get a square wave, a purely linear model. And if I'm switching at 10 kilohertz and my dead times are 10 nanoseconds, this is my model of the DAB. This gives me everything that matters. Right? It's just voltages being applied across an inductor. The usefulness of state plane analysis and figuring out, okay, what exactly are the dynamics during this dead time is when that dead time is significant, right? So if my dead time is 10% of my overall period, then what exactly is going on during that resonance has significant effect on what my output is, and a significant effect on the control transfer functions of the converter. It changes the operation. So if you start hard switching, you're really pushing back towards this model, right? Where instead of having some sinusoidal component for 10% of the period, I have, example, I'm below ZVS, so I have a tiny little sinusoid that hardly changes the voltage value. This is VP, my dead time, my kind of resonate up a little bit and then hard switch. This is almost just a pure square wave with some extension of the duty cycle when I'm in the low state, right? It's actually, even though I shut off my FET here, pretty much just staying that same voltage and then hard switching. So this results in, if you want to use a model not taking this into account, it results in some dead time distortion, which means that even though I told my low side switches to be on for this amount of time, I'm going to get volt seconds applied to my inductor that look like they're on for roughly this amount of time. So it's going to slightly alter my behavior from the ideal. But can be analyzed still with state plane is fine. Now, if you need to get into details of what exactly happens during this transition, that's back to what we talked about very early in the course with overlap loss. like that, right? But you can still analyze state plane for sub-ZVS condition, and then when the FETs turn on, draw a line across, it hard switches, and the voltage just goes to VG. Here, November 2nd. So the idea is that as of this Monday, you've done your comparison. Perhaps before, or perhaps just after turning that in, you meet as a group and you decide what's the topology we're really going to pursue and do a full design of. That'll be next Monday. Complete design, everything I need to know about how this converter is going to operate. Okay. Then, having that, you have until the 2nd to do your layout, submit parts, and PCB layout. And then we'll get those ordered and back. You'll have a couple of weeks to do the testing. I believe here, full competition, we've talked more about what's going to be turned in, what are the constraints on the PCB, places to order magnetics from, places to order components from. Anything else? Okay. That being the case, last time we were talking about this generalized EVS analysis, concluded that we wanted inductive loading for our voltage source type inverter to have the potential for ZVS. Then we began motivating this sinusoidal analysis that we're going to get into the remainder lecture today, using the idea that if we have one of these AC link topologies where we have a resonance directly at our fundamental frequency, at our switching frequency, then what's going to happen is the spectrum of our voltage source inverter generating this square wave voltage is going to get heavily attenuated at anything not near this resonant frequency. And what we're going to have in the tank is really well approximated by saying it's just the fundamental component. I can look at only the FS component of this frequency spectrum to analyze my converter. We talked about the limitations of that, gave an example here showing that works as long as things are like I drew here, as long as my resonant frequency of this tank is very close to my switching frequency and it's high Q, like in the green line. If I go to something more like the purple line or push the resonant frequency closer to a different harmonic, then my spectrum isn't going to be dominated by the FS component. It's going to have significant harmonics. So with that in mind, let's look at what the analysis of one of these AC link converters would be, considering only the fundamental component. And I'm going to start with a diode rectifier, assuming this is a full bridge diode rectifier on the secondary side, some arbitrary inductor capacitor transformer tanks, and some active inverter here that's switching to generate square waves. Okay. I use the diode rectifier to match the book and how they derive this. So what I'm going to end up with is I've got DC here on the left, all I care about is the DC component, same thing here on the right. And then everywhere in here, I'm going to only care about AC and really only the switching frequency component of AC in there. And so here I'm defining notation. I'm going to talk about VP and IP as the voltage and current on the primary side of the tank, VS and IS as voltage and current on the secondary side of the tank. And then that's normal, VG and IG at the input, V out, I out at the output. And in my notation, VP is going to be the actual signal. And I'm going to have a notation VP1 is my Fourier series component. I know how to spell series. My Fourier series component at the switching frequency. I'm going to call it 1 because it's going to be the first harmonic in my Fourier series expansion. I did a full Fourier series for any of these square waves. I'd get some DC component and a component at FS, 3FS, 5FS. I'm going to expand and only look at that first harmonic. Okay? And the same notation will apply for all the other signals in my AC midsection here. So IP1 will be the Fourier series expansion of IP, just the FS component. So I'll work through piece by piece here. We'll start with the inverter, which is going to be some voltage source inverter, meaning I've got a DC voltage coming in. I'm going to switch active transistors in a way to generate an AC square wave at the output. And whether it's a full bridge or a half bridge with caps, like in the dual active half bridge, doesn't matter. I just know I'm going to get an AC component coming out. And it's going to be voltage driven. So you use a full bridge just to have something to look at, but it could be any other topology here, just changes in levels. So as I look at my signal VP, VP, say, looks something like this. This is TS, this is TS over 2. And it goes from VG to minus VG. Okay. So if I look at only the fundamental component, VP1, that's going to be some sinusoid. This which is really in phase with this periodic signal, and I'm going to have a magnitude dictated by solving my Fourier series expansion for that element. So if I want to solve that Fourier series, my general definition here, I'm going to look at this as a sinusoid. As a sinusoid, I have only the odd harmonics. Just pulling the definition for the odd harmonics from the Fourier series, what I'm going to get is my V sub 1 is going to be the amplitude coefficient of my Fourier series expansion at FS. Is, by definition, half a period times the integral over a full period of some signal times sine of x dx. Okay. So I've got half period out front, and then I'm integrating over a full period of the signal times the sine at that frequency. Okay. So if I want to do this for VP, what I'm going to have is V1 is 2 over TS times the integral from 0 to TS, VP of T sine of 2 pi FS T DT. And here, have to account for this square wave, but because my square wave is perfectly in phase with the sinusoid, when I multiply the two, what I'm going to get is just Vg times the absolute value sinusoid. So that's positive Vg over the positive half, negative Vg over the negative half. Those negative signs are going to cancel. I'll flip up. Then I'm going to have some signal where both my half periods look the same, an absolute value of a sinusoid, so I can look at just the first half period and say this looks like 2 over Ts times the integral from 0 to Ts over 2, and then I get two of those integrals over a half sine period, and it's going to look like Vg times sine of 2 pi fs dt. Right. So this 2, I could have written it out as the integral from 0 to Ts over 2 of Vg times sine plus integral from Ts over 2 to Ts of minus Vg times minus sine. Take those negative signs and I just get two of them. Right. Okay. Then I'll get 4 Vg if I pull it out over Ts times the integral of this sine. That's going to come out to be, if I want to solve this, I can do it by substitution, substituting in for this and then taking the sine of whatever variable I use. So let's go ahead and do that. So integrating by substitution, I'm going to do a substitution. U is equal to 2 pi fs t, then du is equal to 2 pi fs dt. So I can substitute out here. My integral becomes integral of the sine of u du, where du is dt times 2 pi fs. So I get over 2 pi fs. And I change my limits according to this equation. So if I plug in t is equal to 0, I get 0 for u. I plug in t is equal to ts over 2, I'm going to get pi for u. So this is the integral from 0 to pi. Then I can pull out this 2 pi fs. And evaluate my integral. Now I know integral of sine is a negative cosine. I have minus cosine of u evaluated from 0 to pi. So cosine of pi is negative 1. Cosine of 0 is 1. 2 negative signs. So this evaluates to 2, right? This becomes 4 Vg over Ts times 1 over 2 pi Fs times 2. And then I can cancel 2 and a 2 and an Fs times a Ts. And I'll get this whole thing is equal to 4 Vg over pi. So that 4 Vg over pi is the amplitude of my fundamental component. Okay. Easy enough. So I'm now going to approximate what is output by this full bridge as a sinusoid at frequency fs and amplitude 4 Vg over pi. Okay. The next what I want to look at is the current Ip. And Ip itself is going to be dictated by really the response of the tank, right? What's loading this? So I apply this square wave voltage. What I get back is some wave shape that's the tank's response to that square wave voltage. Right? If my assumptions are true, that I can apply this sinusoidal analysis, my tank's only going to respond to the fundamental, then what I'm going to get from applying this VP1 to the tank is a current, which is a scaled and phase shifted sinusoid, according to whatever the impedance of the tank is, whatever the impedance seen out in this direction is. So my IP is going to be, really I'm going to look at IP1, some sinusoid that is somehow scaled by the magnitude of the impedance seen and shifted by the phase of the impedance seen by this bridge. Okay. So what I want then really is to solve for what the input current is. So I'll get IP1 directly once I look at the tank from VP1. It'll tell me what the AC waveform is for IP1. To really solve the full behavior of this full bridge, I know my input voltage, my output current coming from the tank. I know my output voltage. I need to know my input current. Okay. So IP1, as we've looked at with all of these, is going to be a rectified version of the AC output current. It's going to be rectified according to when the top left and bottom right device are on, IP is just going to flow back to the input. When the top right and bottom left device are on, IP is going to be inverted and go back through the input. So if I look, here are the times when my bridge is switching. So my input current is going to be IP1 during this period, and then negative IP1 when the bridge is connected negatively. This will be my IG. Okay. And for the purposes of modeling, what I'm saying is that out here, I only care about DC. So rather than the fundamental component of this rectified sinusoid thing, I'm just going to calculate the DC component of it. So that's what matters going back into VG. So let me give an expression here for IP1. I'll call it capital IP1 amplitude times sine of omega t minus, I'll call phi in. And I'm saying this amplitude and this phase are going to be dictated by whatever is loading the circuit. Okay. If I put some pure resistor here, then my phase would be zero. My amplitude would be the value of that resistor times VP1, VP1 over the value of that resistor. If it's capacitive, then I'm going to get some phase shift. If it's inductive, I'll get the opposite phase shift. As we were discussing last time with this generalized ZVS analysis, I certainly hope that the load impedance I see from this bridge looks inductive at the switching frequency. Okay? That's what's going to give me the possibility of obtaining ZVS. Doesn't guarantee it, but it makes it possible. And that's why I've drawn this phase shift in some, with some positive phase shift, okay? Assuming that it's an inductive load. So IP1 is this amplitude. Cn is the phase shift here. Phase shift between my voltage and my current, zero crossing. So if I want to know my average input current, I need to take the average value of this IP1 expression when rectified. I can do that by just taking the average value over the first half period. It's going to be the same average value over the second half period and over every subsequent half period. So my average current IG is equal to, I'll integrate over that first half period. It's going to look like 2 over TS, integral from 0 to TS over 2 of my IP1. All right. So if I evaluate this, this looks like 2 over TS IP1. Taking same approach as before, I'm going to get a 1 over omega S, and then this is going to be integral of my sine. If I do the substitution and change my limit, it's going to look like a negative cosine of u evaluated over my limits in terms of actual angle of cosine rather than time. That's going to be from at t is equal to 0, I'm minus t in, and t is equal to ts over 2, I'm going to be pi minus phi in. Okay. So this will then be 2 over TS IP1, write this out, 1 over 2 pi FS times the cosine. Pi minus phi in plus cosine of minus Vn. Okay, cosine of a negative angle is equal to cosine of a positive angle. Cosine is a symmetric function. Cosine of anything plus pi is the negative. So cancel that one out, and then this negative sign goes away for the same reason. So I'm going to get 2 cosine Vn here. Okay. Again, I can cancel a 2 and an FS times a TS. What I end up with is 2 IP1 over pi times cosine of Vn. This is equal to my average value of IG, which is the DC component. Okay, so now making the sinusoidal approximation, what does my equivalent circuit look like considering only the fundamental? Well, what I've got is my input source, VG, that has a current coming out of it of value IG, which is 2IP1 over pi cosine Vn. And then this links over to my output where I have a voltage source value 4 over pi Vg, and it generates a sinusoid purely at the fundamental. The amplitude we solve, and then this current IP1 is equal to 2 some phase shifted and scaled version of that voltage. Okay, so this thing here is a sinusoidal voltage source. Okay. Now, one thing we can look at this and verify if we've done our analysis correctly here is look at the power balance of this thing, right? If this is just my ideal switch network, haven't included any loss mechanisms, then the average power coming in should be average power going out, right? So at the input, my power PG is VG times IG is VG times 2IP1 over pi cosine Cn. Okay. At the output of my bridge, my P sub, let's call it P1, is equal to now the product of my voltage and current, and to get the average value, the DC value, I'm going to have to integrate that over a period. So my instantaneous piece of P1 is VP1 IP1, and that's 4 over pi VG sine of omega ST times IP1 sine omega ST minus Cn. This thing over here is DC, no dependence on time. If I look at my average power over one switching period, it's going to be 1 over TS, integral from 0 to TS, PP1 dt. I'm going to have this product of a sine and a phase shifted sine. So I'm going to need to do something about that. Easiest approach is to use the trig identity. So trig identity I'm going to use is sine of u sine of x is equal to 1/2 cosine of u minus x minus cosine of u plus x. If I plug that in and then take this integral, my average PP1 is going to look like 1 over TS times all the constant terms will come out, 4 over pi VG and IP1. And I'll have the integral from 0 to TS, plugging in my trig identity, 1/2 cosine U minus X is going to be omega ST minus omega ST minus Cn is going to be cosine of Cn minus summing what's in these two sinusoids, cosine of 2 omega ST minus Cn dt. Okay. This thing constant with respect to t, so I'm just going to get ts times that for the integral of this term, the 1/2. This thing is some sinusoid at twice my fs, and I'm integrating over a full period, so I'm going to integrate over two full periods of this sinusoid, and I'm going to get zero, right? Have to. So this becomes 1 over ts, 4 over pi VG IP1, 1/2 TS cosine of Cn. And if I could go through, say, okay, get rid of TS, and I'll have a 2 cancel with the 4. What I'm going to get is 2 over pi bg ip1 cosine cn. That is the same thing I have here. So I can be a little bit confident that my model is internally consistent for this bridge. My input power and my output power are the same for a lossless full bridge. Has to be the case. Okay. We are out of time there, so I will pick up next class with the sinusoidal analysis of the rectifier, and we'll bring it all together to model the converter considering only the fundamental component.
This model is based around